Relations between the Greek Orthodox and Catholic churches have markedly improved in recent years, but what have been some of the most momentous strides on the way of dialogue towards Christian unity? Father Jim Pugliese looks back at Pope John Paul's historic pastoral visit to Athens.
Obviously, that meeting in 2001 on the occasion of his pilgrimage was very important, and we know that it was difficult for that to be cleared. So it's doubly important from that point of view. There's always been a psychological, ghost that's floating around between our relationships between the Greek and the Latin Church of Rome because of past events. Some of those events have grown in the memories of people out of proportion to what those events actually took actually represent historically, and so that there's been an attempt also to purify our memories in both sides, recounting the events around these events. And of course, I'm thinking of particularly the crusades that led through Greece on their way to the Holy Land, where the Orthodox churches were not very well respected by the Latin crusaders. And so the importance of that visit and as marking a turning point in our relationships is very, very important. Obviously, since the time of Paul VI, with the lifting of the mutual excommunications, that the relationships have begun to grow. And as a result of that, we began what was known as the Dialogue of Charity or Love, which were a series of meetings, not official theological dialogues, but ways of encountering one another. For example, as recently the visit of the Orthodox Patriarch to Rome on the occasion of the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul, and the Pope's visit to Constantinople on the Feast of Saint Andrew. These were all signs of ancient practices. And so these were things that Paul VI began, and they continued down through the years up until John Paul II, who really wanted to bring our relationship to a new level. And this was hoped for, anyway, with the beginning of the dialogue. And, of course, the major hiccup in that dialogue was the question of the so-called uniate churches, that is, Oriental churches that are in communion with the Catholic Church of Rome.
Since the very start of his pontificate, Pope Benedict XVI has made uniting the churches a top priority. Father Mark Sheridan again.
Pope Benedict, about 30 years or so ago, made a statement, apparently, that he could imagine union of the churches on the basis of what they had in common in the first 1,000 years. That is, before the rupture of relations in the 11th century.
If the churches of East and West might find union on the things that they once shared in common, what are some of the issues that have divided them over the centuries? Philippa Hitchin put that question to the Archbishop Demetrius of the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of America and asked him, why is Christian unity so important?
I think it's such a basic thing for people who are familiar with the basics of the gospel. The demand by the Lord Christ for unity, and unity that it's important because the unity there, Christ speaks about the Christians being one as we, you Father and myself, are one. It's a strong theological basis for unity, and then also he emphasized the fact that through the unity, the glory and the truth of God would be proclaimed. So this is a sine qua non factor in the proclamation of the Christian gospel today. You cannot really, being divided, have the full strength that the gospel has. So this, for people who are Christians and feel the command of the Lord, it's a very strong thing. Now, they are aware of a separation for almost 1,000 years. This cannot be done. Some over-optimistic people a little bit naive thinkers, they say, oh, let's have a dialogue and we finish. We don't finish with a dialogue. We need considerable time. And for theologians, we need an engagement, a strong engagement in a serious dialogue, which will produce results. We have this experience in the States. In the States, the dialogue between Roman Catholics and Orthodox never stopped, in contradistinction to what happened to the international dialogue. Never stopped. Now, it not only never stopped, it produced results. There is a very nice document on the filioque, which shows a very clear progress, theologically speaking, in facing a theological issue which has been central in the division of the two churches. They also issued other statements about baptism, validity of sacraments. So that shows that with a systematic, persistent, honest work, results could come. Therefore, we think that this is now something in the minds of the Orthodox people, something that raises the expectation of more systematic, more persisting, and therefore more hope-producing dialogue among the churches.
You've touched on some of the theological questions which have traditionally divided the Roman Catholic and the Orthodox world. What do you see really as the most serious, outstanding obstacles on this ecumenical journey?
We could say we have three level of references here in obstacles. One are the obstacles of purely theological nature. One of them is the filioque, for instance, the teaching about the Holy Spirit. There might be some Mariological issues, the Immaculate Conception, although this is a debatable theological issue, it's not like the filioque, but yet it is something. You might also have some understandings about the specifics in the sacraments. Number two, level two, is the ecclesiological level, the primacy of the Pope, the infallibility of the Pope. For the Orthodox understanding, the supreme governance of the Church is conciliar, is the synod, is all the bishops convening in the Holy Spirit and working together. And whatever the issue, then becomes the infallible. It's not the one person pronouncing. So here is what we call ecclesiology. It deals with the nature of the administration of the Church, the way the Church proceeds in pronouncing and explaining, interpreting the truths of the Gospel. And there is a third level of issues, more practical and more visible, and this is the existence of the unitism. The unitism, which became a strong issue after the change in Eastern Europe, this was before that, we know that, but after the change, it became a pronounced issue. In fact, it caused the stopping of the dialogue, in essence. It was one of the major issues, because all of a sudden they said, what are we talking here about dogmatics and other things? Here we have a burning issue like this, and unless we have something, clear steps here on the part of the Roman Catholic Church, said the Orthodox representation, we cannot really continue. So it was a serious issue, and still is. And it's something that is, in a way, it causes internal, sometimes, might cause internal problems even within the Roman Catholicism. When you have, for instance, in the Uniate Church, a following of the Byzantine liturgical practices, that's one thing. They recognize the Pope as the authority, but they have married clergy. If married clergy exists within the Roman Catholic Church, then marriage or celibacy is not an absolute thing. You can imagine how this goes to the depth of the foundations of some ecclesiological positions, like the eternal nature of priestly celibacy. And they say, what eternal relation? I mean, if you have the units, this is not at all absolute. Not to talk about the Orthodox Church, which is an example of this. Or rule, there is not a rule in existence. So you have this issue of the unitism, which, because it involves a considerable amount of population, of population in Ukraine, and also in Middle East, we have the Melkites and other people like that.
You're talking about these political, historical differences that have been the reason behind this fracturing in the Christian community. But as you say, this weakens our witness to the gospel today.
Absolutely.
What gives you most hope?
There is a need here. The need is imperative. It's not simply a need. It's an urgency. In fact, some people would say it's an emergency. We don't have time to wait. I have the experience of September 11. I was there, and I can't forget the view after the attack there, inhaling smoke filled with all sorts of things, perhaps particles from human bodies. It's no way to describe it. And I remember when I just finished this visit, it was just within this atmosphere, and when we were leaving, the journalists and the TV people were not allowed to come so close, so they were expecting us. So they stopped me and say, "Do you feel your faith weakened or tested by what you saw?" And I said, "Not really." Because at the same time, I saw people coming down in many ways, bringing all sorts of assistance, and people were all sorts of religious faiths and things. So I said, there is a hope here. You have an explosion of negativism, but you have also an explosion of love here. So the hope is that because of the need, people will decide that they have to go together, work together. And I think we have been together after that, much closer, with my good friend Cardinal Egan of New York, and also the Protestant people there, even the Jewish community. Even I remember after that we have been even with some of the Muslim representatives, and they invited me to their mosques to speak. That was the result of facing tremendous catastrophes that really need this what we call togetherness. So my hope is that exactly because of the major problems that we face today, that we will increase also our way of cooperation, and without forgetting that beyond the practical reasons and the reasons of love and charity and pain, we have also the permanent, non-stopping command of the Lord that we have to be one.
Archbishop Demetrios of the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of America.